Alex Kergel is a high-performance coach described as one of London's top coaches by Influence Digest and the recipient of the Innovative Executive Coach of the Year Award. Alex also sits on the Forbes Coaches Council and is a fellow of the Royal Society of Public Health. His clients range from high-velocity scale-up businesses to world-class athletes. His mission is to support changemakers in actualizing and amplifying their positive impact in the world.
So you've got to be very clear about what you want. And that's one of the critical questions I very often ask.
How do I know how well I'm performing every day?
Yes, thank you. So we failed. Okay, so what? What's happening? Let's dive into it. Let's learn from it. Self-love is such a powerful and transformative way to look at performance. You don't need to suffer, you know, to go where you want to go.
Alex, I'm beyond excited about having you on because I feel you might cure a load of things that I've got in my mind that need solving. It feels like problem solution is exactly where you come from and the thing that you excel at. I want to start by asking you, how do I know how well I'm performing every day? How do I know if I'm underperforming or performing to the best of my abilities? Is there a way of being able to somehow quantify and qualify that?
There are many ways, you know, we could approach it, but you probably have a sense deep inside if there is something that you can do better. It's quite interesting because sometimes we think about, you know, comparing ourselves with other people, where actually you just look inside. How do I really feel compared to who I was yesterday and who I want to become? So I think it's more of an inner game.
So how do we start that process then? If we're not somebody who's stereotypically comfortable with that self-analysis and self-assessment, how do we start to learn how to do that and how to do it better so that we can ultimately achieve better performance?
So I think it's interesting, you know, the approach with performance where we used to look at performance from an angle of measuring and improving and going in some tough moments. And then I think, you know, when it comes to actually, there is some other level when you go deep inside, you know, in terms of the belief. What is the belief that makes you want to perform to a certain level? But then when you go kind of inside, you realize that performance, you know, comes down to something that is closer to self-love. And I like to approach performance not so much from a mechanical standpoint, but more from a self-love. Self-love is like the deepest kind of the innate nature of your state of well-being. When you think about, you know, self-love and you can measure how worthy you are, you know, by connecting with self-love. So I think there is this regular approach of performance, mechanical approach that we can have. And there is this kind of inner approach that is not so much about mental toughness, where mental toughness can be more a kind of a shield against adversity. It's just reframing how you look at performance, because often you think about, am I good enough? And that's where you tune in. Because when you think about it, it could be like climbing a mountain. And imagine like climbing a mountain and you could start with, would you climb your Everest with flip-flops? Or sometimes, you know, we climb the mountain, but you've got kind of blisters along the way. And so you kind of ignore them. You just kind of, you want to be tough. And actually, are you going to go to the top of the mountain where there is this kind of journey of looking after yourself, and that is not only kind of helping you in your performance, but it can really transform it and how you approach performance.
We talk a lot in sport about marginal gains and being able to incrementally change the dial and shift things up so that the performance is as maximized and as optimized as it possibly can be. In business, with the CEOs that you've worked with, in professional sport, because you've worked with a lot of elite footballers as well, What are the areas that are the common problems? What are the common problem areas? Because there must be some denominators amongst groups of people that are highly driven professionals where performance is a problem or where they're looking for areas to improve. What have you seen as those common denominators amongst those types of people?
So let me answer that question by sharing a little bit more about the people I look after. And so let me take you back to in time. There is a book that was written called The Medici Effect, and it's about the Medici family back in the 14th century in Florence, in Italy. And at the time, it was just the beginning of the Renaissance, and they attracted philosophers, sculptors, painters, and all these people created intersection, you know, between themselves. And it just, you know, was such a boost for innovation. And so that's why we still remember, you know, the Medici family. When I look at coaching, I love to work with people from so many different fields and cultures. I can be inspired from working on something very specific with a footballer that you can apply with an investor, that you can also apply with a CEO. You move from tech, you move from Mexico to Johannesburg, and you move from a culture to another one. So it just kind of really creates an ecosystem. And I think for me as a coach, you can pick up from multiple areas how to improve people. Then another layer is the belief system that you create, because you make your beliefs and then your beliefs make you. It's just a loop that is created, and how you question yourself about your beliefs. An example is, I am not good enough, or I don't deserve it. Self-confidence that you see, I see regularly. So I think what I'm trying to say is, it's just a belief that you create. It just goes as a mental loop, and you can get stuck into that. So that's one of the things I see regularly. So for me as a coach is moving from an industry to another one is how you can create new territories, how you can help people to ask themselves quality questions that are going to drive quality decisions. And from quality decisions, you can move to quality actions. So I think, you know, the common thing I see are naturally the belief system, but also the willingness to run 100 meters again and again and again, and not running a marathon. If you really want to do some big things, you just got to play a longer game. And sometimes it's very intense. So finding the boundaries is critical. And as we talk about boundaries, that's an interesting one. There is something I like I've kind of noticed after thousands of hours of coaching is what I call the upside down. The upside down is how usually people look at things and how high performers look at things. And if I was to give you a couple of examples, if you think about the combo business, family, and personal, I want to have an amazing career so I can look after my family and I'm going to feel good. You've got to take this upside down, because if you don't, and what I've noticed is you end up in burnout because you work so much that you've got nothing left for your family and very little left for yourself, or very often, almost nothing. So if you play around, you know, and you start by yourself, I feel strong, I'm good, I'm happy with what I do, so I can spend time with my family, which very often corporate athletes and sport athletes will tell me, family is the most important thing for me. And that's a question I would often ask, what's the most important? Business or family? Family. Okay, so let's reshuffle things. You look after yourself first, then family, and then business. It's counterintuitive because you spend a lot more time working. So that's one of the part of the upside down. Another one is the combo having, doing, being. I want to accumulate a lot of things so I can do this and I can be happy. Upside down. First, you need to feel really good, be connected with, aligned with what you want to do, and then you can move to the doing, and then you can have what you want. It works the same with time. We said, you know, are you what you want, or are you kind of bringing right now in the present the future? Very often we see the future as something quite distant. But when you bring it in the present and you behave right now as who you want to be, you bring in the present the future. And just playing with time is just so important because we nourish fears about, oh, you know, becoming this. And so you bring it in the present. And then the last one is when you want more, be more, very often you do more. You need to flip that as well. It's actually by doing less that you become more, and how you really zoom into some very specific areas of what you want to do.
When you talk about the upside down approach, that chimes so much with me, and I'm sure it does with many other people, but how do you make that an actual practical reality? How do you get these people that are seriously highly driven professionals who all probably do want to put family first, but fundamentally a meeting goes in the diary and suddenly, you know, that school play or whatever it is gets pushed down the line of importance, and the thing that ends up counting for more is that meeting that absolutely can't be changed. How do you get people to see it and then make it actually a reality and happen? Because I'm sure many people would be, of course my family comes first before my business, but how do they implement it?
Naturally, this is not easy. It comes down to priorities. And you just said it. This meaning is absolutely important to me. Is it? How important? Let's talk about it. And you just weigh your priorities. Naturally, when you get into that, we come back to the last part of the upside down, which is less is more. Do you have to be involved in so many things that you do in your life? Because, you know, think of it like beam of lights. If you've got like, you know, many beams of light, you know, it's just going to go to a certain distance. But if you got less, it's going to go with the same level of energy, it can go a lot further. So one example I had recently is an exec where, you know, his wife pregnant, there's a lot going on at home. Business is just like booming. There is a lot of things. And we talk about it and say, Alex, just at home, it's just not easy. And so it's having an impact on the work. And naturally, so the question is, what is the most important to you? It's a simple question, but when you come to the realization that you've got to be there, you've got to be there for your family, then you start to find solutions. Then you start to be, you've got to be pushed sometimes to make these kind of decisions. So it's probably better to be proactive than reactive. But we come back to the loop that we were talking about, the belief that you've got to do so many things, the belief that, you know, you have to achieve to actually love yourself. Do you need all that? What does that bring you? So you see, the game on the external and the internal is so important because you actually, your mind is the workshop of your life, and then reality will catch up. But so you've got to be very clear about what you want. And that's one of the critical questions I very often ask. What do you want? And if I was, you know, we were to have this conversation and we dive into the details, Georgie, I'm going to ask you, what do you want? And then we're going to look and we're going to consider everything you've got, on your plate. And we're going to consider what is the most important to you. And then we're going to have to make some decisions. And it's not so easy when you are by yourself, because asking yourself quality questions when you have your loop of belief is not so easy. So that's where it's interesting to have a coach, because, and I have a coach, because I have my own loops and beliefs and I need to be challenged, and with someone who's going to ask me questions that I would not ask myself about what is important, what do you want? And then the second point is, once you're pretty clear about what you want, which often as a coach, I spend quite a bit of time on, because sometimes also you've got some beliefs that I believe I can just get there when you can go a lot further. So you've got to, just in the what do you want, there's a lot going on. And then the second point is, do you kind of want it? Are you interested to get it? Or are you committed to get it? And you see, the level of intention and commitment is also very important, because you can be, I love my family, but then you spend so much time at work, so you're not really committed. It's just like something you say. And it's so important from a coaching perspective, because coaching is about the present, the action, and the future. We land coaching sessions on action, just not a chat. I mean, that's the kind of coaching I deliver. If you want to have a chat, go talk to a friend. If you really want to move things, let's talk.
And what do you do when somebody says to you, okay, so I've made this extra time, I've said family first, and I've put sort of business, you know, down the pecking order a little. And yet what invariably happens is they're sat in that family environment, but maybe on their phone. And so not there's such a thing, isn't there, as being present and also just not being present. I mean, what is your advice on that? Because that, I think, is one of the common problems facing all of us in this world in which we live in, is that just put the phone down. But it's so much harder to actually do than it is to think that you would want to do it.
So what I would share here is this. Being fully present, 100% present in the now, is the best way to build a good future. What often happens is you are 25% thinking about stuff, and our mind can be like a misbehaved dog chasing squirrels and thinking about the past and things, in distracting you from being in the present. So if you consider being 25% in the past, and then you've got another 25% thinking about work and things and or other things at what you do, then you effectively have only 50% of yourself in the now. And having only half of you in the now, what is going to be the impact on your future? So I think it's a pretty profound acknowledgement that if you are fully present when you do something, this is the absolute best way to prepare a solid future. And of course, we're absorbed with so many things and we come back doing less, can do more. Yes, you've got your phone coming up when, you know, you're in the evening and your phone is coming, it's ringing, you've got WhatsApp, Slack, and many things. Spending the time and being fully present with your family, or being fully present in a meeting, you know, being in a meeting and kind of responding calls and this kind of thing, you're just not fully present for yourself, but also for the people that you're with. So I think being fully there is extremely important. So that would be my advice is if you want to build a strong future, be too fit in your present.
We talked earlier about the things that sort of hold you back from ultimate performance. How much is a fear of failure part of that? When we talk about sort of elite athletes, I know this from my personal experience being married to one, but definitely this fear of failure is a big deal. Is that the same that you see that across other driven professionals from the world of business or politics or other professions that you've worked with?
So I think one of the first point is being clear on your vision and what you really want to achieve. Because once you're pretty clear about what you want to achieve and you get into action, that already kind of, you know, get you really focused on the execution. But I think, you know, that really depends, you know, failure should be, I mean, the best way to approach failure is as a stepping stone. And I'm going to tell you something. I personally sometimes get a bit scared when I'm not failing enough. Because I'm like, okay, Alex, you're not taking enough risk. And then you're staying in your comfort zone. And so I've got to push myself to do things that are outside the comfort zone. So I think for people that I coach, we really kind of look at it from a vision standpoint. Where do you want to go? I had the example quite recently with a football player where we were talking about, Alex, I fear that I'm going to be on the bench and I really want to play. This fear of being on the bench made him not taking risk. And as he was not taking risk, he was actually increasing the risk of being on the bench. So one of the things that we've been kind of working on together is playfulness and just be you. Because, you know, very often the mind is kind of coming with the loops and the beliefs that we talked about. And for sports athletes, the body knows a lot about what needs to be done, where the mind is kind of, you know, coming along and kind of, you know, hey, this is what might happen and all these kind of things. So here in this precise example, what we've done is just kind of just play, just be good, be you and the best that you can be. And then I was kind of looking in the newspapers and he got, you know, at the end of the game, the man of the match. And he was just feeling so happy because he could really play and just letting go of this kind of bench fear that he had. So I think what you focus on, if you focus on fear, probably it will come knocking. But if you are fully present in the execution of what you've got to do and keep this playfulness of what you do, and we come back to the alignment of, are you really doing, and the being, are you really doing what you want to do?
We always sort of ask this question of performance coaches, sort of what can you take from other areas in which you're, you know, gleaning information from people into different worlds. So what can you take from the sports world into the business world? And that question comes about a lot. But I know that you work as well with a lot of prisoners. What can you take from your learnings in that area into your work with footballers, CEOs, you know, people running serious enterprise? You know, are there real commonalities that you can see there as well?
Yes, of course. So let me maybe share a little bit of a story to start with. Let me take you for the first time I actually got in a prison. It was morning, 8 a.m. So I've never been close to any prison, right? So the reason I actually decided to do that is because it's great to work with millionaires. But how about, could you, Alex, work with people who are locked physically and mentally? What would that be to coach people in that kind of area? So I got there 8 a.m. in front of the prison, big walls, barbed wires. You get in, you give your phone. So no mobile phone. If anyone wants to call you, they need to call the prison. And then you go through the security check. And then it's not like Heathrow or Gatwick. It's just proper check because they look for drug. And then after you get in, open a door, another one. And then you just realize you're just in this kind of locked environment. And I remember then they told me, oh, Alex, we're just going to go through Wing A. Oh, Wing A is the kind of basic kind of wing. And, you know, all the prisoners are going to be kind of there. So just one bit of recommendation, just don't stare. And I was like, don't worry, I'm not going to stare. And so I just, you know, went into that and I was thinking, Alex, what are you doing here? Because you're just, you know, very close from probably the, you know, very dangerous people in the UK. And then we went to the coaching room, and then the first guy comes in, like, massive guy, and was like, okay. And then you've got the buzzer that is kind of, it's got to be 2 meters from you in case anything happens. So naturally, you know, coaching in that kind of conditions for me was a bit of a challenge. Then the second guy comes in with like a massive scar on his face. And I was with another coach, so you're not by yourself. But then when we started, the very first thing that came up from one of the prisoners, there were, you know, a bunch of them. It's a kind of group coaching session. The very first thing was to talk about visualization. He talked about vibration and visualization. And I was like, wow, this is exactly what I can talk about with exec. And in my mind, just prisoner was just a label, something, and it all became very concrete and real that we're not so different in some sense. So I think what I want to share here is that we believe that sometimes people are very far, but they're not so far. And the commonalities that I can see between prisoners and exec, they're a couple. So let me tell you a story to explain this first point. I was talking to an exec 2 weeks ago, and he was sharing with me that when he was young, he was very close to actually doing things that could take him in prison. This kind of willingness to break the rules, as you know, as this willingness can take you from becoming a millionaire or get in prison. But luckily, you know, he met someone, and then he went to a different country, and he went on a different path, and he left, you know, what could have, you know, taken him not in a so great place. So breaking the willingness to breaking the rules is something that, you know, as has commonalities, but also wearing a mask in a prison, this is a tough environment. So it's very difficult to be you. You've got to be strong. You can't show weakness. For a CEO, when the company is not doing so well, when it's not easy, you've got to be the one kind of being there for everyone. So can you show that actually it's, you've got to be there for people? So I think there is this kind of comparison that I, you know, I'm noticing as well, you know, operating in very tough environments on both sides.
Isn't that interesting? I mean, you would never have thought that would have been so clear cut, but it really, really is, isn't it? The things that you've mentioned, the kind of the rule breaking, that sort of mask wearing, almost sort of a competitive edge in many ways.
Yes, I think it's just like how life, you know, can take you from one path to another one. What really strikes me is how, and it's not only one exec. You know, these guys, they just, you know, look, if you think about a company like Kodak, you know, at the beginning of the 20th century, they were the first one to kind of, you know, move forward with dividends, you know, for employees. But then Kodak now, it's just like, you know, how do you keep breaking the rules and, you know, this sustained high performance of being always kind of on the edge? And so that's, you know, this kind of concept of kind of breaking the rules, which also, by the way, if we come back to the beginning of this conversation, how you make your beliefs and your beliefs make you, and how you can be trapped into this narrative about yourself where actually you just love the narrative and you actually make your belief system kind of, you would expect when you've got new information to kind of change your belief system. But actually, your belief system make the information fit what you really believe. So this kind of willingness to break the rules, to go and find the edge, it's very subtle. You just don't realize it. And that's why these marginal gains, when you talk about athletes and footballers, physically, they are all really, really strong. But what really makes the difference is how you apply your mindset into something that is going to allow you to grow. And we very often talk about the fixed mindset and the growth mindset, which is also a very interesting aspect I work with. That's at the core of what I do. And let me take an example. Think about a football player, a striker getting on the pitch. And he's saying, I want to score 2 goals. And he's going to get on the pitch and he scores only one. At the end of the game, he's like, ah, I just not happy with my performance. and it's just not going to be happy. The mood is just there. The behavior has not been in line with what he hoped. And then it's going to be up and down depending on the results. Fixed mindset. This is what I want to achieve. Think about another player who's going to come on the pitch, a striker, and he's going to say, I don't care about the number of goals, which is counterintuitive. But what he's going to say is, this is going to be the absolute best game I've ever played. And I'm going to do the best I can today. And what does that mean? And in between trainings, you actually work on that kind of mindset. And I can tell you in the long run, because I've seen it again and again and again with people I coach. You just remove the ball. You just remove the stress. We were talking about failing. Yes, thank you. So we failed. Okay, so what? What's happening? Let's dive into it. Let's learn from it. It's, you know, of course, you know, failing sometimes can be really tough, but what is the narrative that you put on failing? And I think society put a narrative of it's not good. But if you really work with the growth mindset, you nourish yourself with this kind of moment as stepping stones for you to get to the next level.
It's a great way of looking at it, isn't it? And it's something that everyone can dive into. It's not exclusive, is it? It's very inclusive looking at it from that perspective. So bearing in mind this is a Performance People podcast and everyone wants to know or glean information on how they can live a better performance standpoint and lifestyle, what can they do? What's one thing that someone could do every single day that could lead to better performance? I suspect you're now going to use the growth mindset analogy, but is there anything that they could do? The first thing they do when they get up in the morning, they say, this is going to give me a better day.
So we've got so many unique kind of people listening, and each one's got a very unique mental makeup. So it's not so easy to give a single answer. But you have, I think, you know, you've got to be very clear about what you want. I would really start there again. What do you want? Because very often, you know, we move, you know, the mind is going here and there. So clarity about what you want is important. And I also want to go back to, you know, this notion of performance that is around measurement, that is around, you know, just kind of the habits, the routine, just the mechanical kind of way of looking at performance, and just go back into how your self-love is such a powerful and transformative way to look at performance. You don't need to suffer, you know, to go where you want to go. So it could be very simple things. Go in front of a mirror and say, I love you. I love you.
I don't think I can.
You could stop. You could also kind of, just starting with gratefulness. You open your eyes in the morning. It's a new day. I'm so grateful to be here. It's a new start. You don't need to climb the mountains with like years and years of emotional baggage. So I think the ability to let go, what can I let go today? And just, you know, to climb the mountain lighter. So there's so many ways that depending on if you're talking to like a high performer, like taking it very, very seriously. And to that person, I would be like, vision clear, but also self-love, because these people can be like really just a relentless self-discipline, can be like a very strict teacher that is not going to give you any praise. You know, we can go back to the, you know, climbing the mountain with your blisters and you ignoring them. You can actually, and that might actually give you an extra 10% of performance.
It's true. I mean, those very people that you speak of have such high expectations of themselves, and ultimately are most disappointed by themselves if it doesn't go according to plan. So you're right, that self-love piece for people like that will be a challenge, but one that clearly is worth overcoming.
Absolutely. It's not so intuitive for these kind of people. So that's why I think from a coaching perspective, look, I come from a finance background. I've got my, I like to have, you know, my tattoo with my 7 stars to tell me like, this is the kind of level where you need to go. So that kind of reminds me that. But all these kind of elements are important. The relentless spirit, all the things that we talk about with performance. But it all starts inside and with this, at the absolute core, with this kind of self-love that you've got. When there is nothing left, you've given everything, that's the companion that you're going to have in the end. And so it's just also very, connect really well with the inner voice and the inner story that you tell yourself. It connects with the belief.
Alex, thank you so much. That's been really, really fascinating. Thank you.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you.